Everywhere you look these days, it appears we live in an increasingly violent world. Car bombs in the Middle East and Southeast Asia, random shootings in the U.S., riots in the U.K. In his new book, renowned psychologist and cognitive neuroscientist and linguist Steven Pinker shows why this assumption is wrong and why we're more humane today than at any time in our history. Drawing from psychology, history, brain science, war studies, game theory, complexity theory, and popular culture, Pinker explores where violence comes from, why it has been so common over the course of history, and how we have been slowly bringing it under control. The name of the new book is Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. And we welcome Steven Pinker to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. Great pleasure.
My pleasure.
Steven Pinker is an experimental psychologist and one of the world's foremost writers on language, mind, and human nature. Currently, Harvard College professor and Johnstone Family Professor of Psychology at Harvard University. How did you come to the subject of violence and its decline?
It came from an interest in human nature. What makes us tick? Do we have inclinations that lead us to violence? If we do, does it mean that we're doomed to war and strife and murder forever? The answer is, I think, is clearly no, and it's because human nature has more than one part, even if it does have systems and emotions that lead us to fight and bicker. It also has systems that inhibit us from violence, and human history depends on which of those systems is engaged by the environment.
So when it comes to factors, what do you believe has had the greatest effect on this decrease in violence?
Government plays a role. The most violent parts of the world are usually the ones that still live in anarchy. The American Wild West, remote mountainous regions, failed states, collapsed empires. So I would put third-party dispute resolution and law enforcement way up there. I think that commerce has played a role, that if it's cheaper to buy stuff than to steal it, and if other people are more valuable alive than dead, that changes the payoffs. I think education and literacy and knowledge of history and science and economics helps. You're less likely to blame misfortunes on evil ethnic groups. You're less likely to demonize others. And I think things that work to expand your empathy, novels, films, plays, journalism, memoir, biography, help in getting you into the habit of standing in other people's shoes.
When we discuss this in a decrease in violence, I assume a baseline is in order for what the definition of violence is.
Yeah, I just go by what's in the dictionary, basically the application of force to harm someone.
So looking at that definition, many would knee-jerk, but would argue that we live in a violent society. Why do you believe that is the perception for many people?
Well, there are always enough violent incidents to fill the evening news. So if you're just going around and trying to think up examples, and that is the way the human mind works, you're going to come away with the illusion that there's lots of violence, but your mind doesn't linger over parts of the world like Argentina and Indonesia and Poland and Northern Ireland and Angola and Mozambique, places that used to be riven with horrific wars. And that have calmed down, but no one sends a reporter out to announce that some guy in Angola is dying of cancer. If he was blown up, then there'd be a film crew there, and so our impression of violence is disconnected from the actual proportions.
This country has been at war for the last 10 years. Do we become somewhat complacent as a result of that decade?
I don't think so. I think we see more of a phenomenon of casualty dread and war fatigue, where wars become increasingly unpopular over time. There was a fair amount of support for the invasion of Iraq and even more so for the invasion of Afghanistan in the first few weeks. But as it dragged on and more people died, the political pressure changed from how do we win to how do we get out? And that has been a recent trend in many wars, most notably Vietnam.
And yet we remain in war.
Well, we do, but on the other hand, wars have changed. There were Vietnam killed maybe 3 million people. The war in Iraq, closer to 150,000. And of those, the vast majority were not killed by American forces, but by Iraqis slaughtering each other. But even if you put aside the cause, it's an enormous shift in how destructive wars are. And just to say, well, we had war then, we have war now, nothing's changed, is to ignore the numbers.
Is that because they have become more technological, or because that there is a psychological shift and that there is less of a concern of who is put in harm's way?
Well, I think there's more of a concern of who's put in harm's way, because as terrible as drones can be, they're a hell of a lot better than carpet bombing. If you're in a war in the first place, now granted it might be better not to be in that war, but the waging of wars has changed with far more regard for human life than we saw 40 years ago, to say nothing of 70 years ago.
You look at the first half of the 20th century, two world wars. The second half saw a very long term of peace. How is that explained?
Well, remember, one point is not a trend. So you can say, well, here's an example of violence, there's an example of violence, that shows that it's increasing. But that's a mathematical fallacy. You need several points to establish a trend. And just cherry-picking examples forgets all about the atrocities of previous centuries. The Mongol invasions, the European wars of religion, the African slave trade, the annihilation of native peoples, the collapse of various Chinese dynasties that killed people by the tens of millions. So, yes, there were terrible events in the first half of the 20th century, but there were terrible events before the 20th century. And then the second half of the 20th century has seen some quite astonishing historical reversals. It's really the first time in history that the great powers have not gone to war with each other directly, the biggest and most powerful states. It's also a time at which rich countries have decided to stop fighting wars with each other. We don't have to really worry about Italy going to war with Sweden, but for a lot of European history, the richest countries of the world were constantly at each other's throats. So there have been changes, substantial changes, even over the course of the 20th century.
So with that in mind, let me go back to an earlier question of why violence has declined. We began to see this decline when?
It's happened at a variety of scales of time and magnitude. Perhaps the first big reduction came from the transition from the anarchy of tribal peoples and hunters and gatherers and horticulturalists to the first states. Now, the first states were pretty brutal, but they often did get the various peoples to stop their cycles of feuding, and it drove down the overall death rates. So that was probably the first transition. And there have been others, like the transition from the Middle Ages to the modern era, saw a reduction in rates of homicide of about 35. That is, contemporary Europeans are about 35 times less likely to be victims of murder than their ancestors.
And where do we sit now?
We sit now at the bottom of an awful lot of curves. Of a curve of deaths in warfare, curve of homicides, and curves of violence at smaller scales, like persecution of racial minorities, criminalization of homosexuality, domestic violence like spousal abuse, spanking and bullying and child abuse. All of these are at low points of curves for as long as they've been measured.
When it comes to what is called the age of terrorism and a concern over a terrorist attack and great fear that even though the violence may be decreased, we still live in fear of that violence.
Yes, and in fact, that's almost a definition of terrorism, is that it creates much more fear than damage. The 9/11 attacks were off the scale. They were by far the most destructive event, terrorist event in history. And even then, you don't want to make light of 3,000 deaths. But in a country that has 17,000 murders a year and 20-something thousand automobile deaths, even that was, by world standards, not a huge statistical loss of life. And it has been nothing like it ever since. But what terrorism does do, of course, is leave people in fear, and that's what it's exactly what it's designed to do.
Can we take solace in the fact that, looking at this scientifically, that violence has declined when there still are violent acts? Meaning that if you are personally impacted in some way, those figures mean nothing.
Well, yes, but if you're one of the people who hasn't been impacted, and would have been impacted if the rates had remained what they used to be, then it means everything in the world. It means life itself. So if the homicide rate goes down from, say, 35 per 100,000 per year to 1 per 100,000 per year, well, if you're that one guy, it doesn't matter. But if you're the 34 guys who haven't been killed, then
right.
Yes, it does matter.
But I guess my concern and my question is does it bring a false sense of security, or is it a very true sense of security?
I think it's a true sense of security, and it's also it focuses the mind on what we might have done right and what we can do more of in the future. If you think people will always kill each other, either every person in humanity or in godforsaken parts of the world like Africa, why bother even trying to help them out? They're just a bunch of warlords who will always be killing each other. Then you might say, well, it's a fool's errand. It's just useless do-goodism. But if you look at the statistics and you see, geez, in Africa, the rate of death and warfare has come way, way down, then you think, well, these things can change. They really are worth improving, and it can be an antidote to compassion fatigue or a sense of futility that we can ever make the world a better place.
Are we more empathetic?
I tend to think we are, yes. I think more we live in a global village. We see the suffering of other people much more immediately than was true, say, 100 years ago. Our circle of concern has extended to other parts of the world, to children, to animals, in a way that's, I think, historically unusual.
You write about the empathy circle. What is that?
That's the circle of beings whose interests you value the way you value your own. And the philosopher Peter Singer has argued that left to our own devices, our empathy circle is pretty small. It's our family, our friends, maybe our clan. But over the course of history, you can see the circle expanding to include the entire tribe, the nation, the race, and most recently, all of humanity, and perhaps even all sentient beings, including animals.
And does that come from an awareness?
I think it comes partly from emotions, from accounts of what it's like to be an African American or a child or an animal, in a fictitious account of what it's like to be an animal from the first-person point of view. But I think it also comes from the intellect, from when you sit down and you start to reason how you ought to behave. It's harder to say, well, I can treat someone else however I please because they're them and I'm me. That might be convincing to you, but it's not going to be convincing to anyone else. The more you have to justify what you do, the more you tend to universalize interests, and the harder it is to privilege your own interests, and the more you're forced to a wide circle of empathy. So the head can drive the heart as well as the other way around.
You mentioned a moment ago that we're at the bottom of the curve when it comes to violence against women and children and homosexuals. What do you think has led to that?
I think that partly it's this expansion of reason that makes it increasingly indefensible to justify forms of persecution, that there's aspects of human life that used to be completely unexamined. The more you think about them, the more you realize that you really can't get away with committing violence and exploitation against vulnerable beings. So let me give you the most recent example is bullying of children, which wasn't even an issue 20 years ago. Now the President of the United States gives speeches about stamping out bullying. Why do we care about bullying now? Well, one part of it is we just think about what it's like to be a child. What happens to a child who's bullied? How much suffering do they undergo? In the past, you might write off bullying and say, well, kids need to be toughened up. It's just part of childhood. You can never stamp it out. Now we think, well, for the one who's bullied, life is hell. How can we justify allowing that to happen? It's that kind of reasoning that has been pushed into more and more distant corners of human experience and even animal experience.
With this decrease in violence, does that indicate that we have become more equal, that there is more equality?
In some sense, there hasn't been a whole lot more economic equality, especially in this country. But there is, in the sense of, say, when there was a distinction between, say, serfs and aristocrats, and the or conscripts into an army and the officer corps, and the little people could just be sacrificed in war without a moment's thought. Now we tend to think that the little guy has the same right not to be killed as the big guy. And so even if the income isn't equalized, the basic human rights of who lives and who dies is more equal than it used to be. Likewise, other parts of the world, like we're concerned now about war in Africa, whereas I think 100 years ago, it's, well, if the natives are killing each other, why is that our problem?
And also, it would seem that economic inequality would often be a cause for violence.
Well, there is a correlation across societies and states between inequality and crime. No one really knows why. That is, countries with greater amounts of inequality, such as the United States, have higher rates of violence. One possibility is that unequal societies don't extend police protection to the poorer neighborhoods, and they have to fend for themselves, and they can descend into anarchy. Another is that in an unequal society, people feel that there's less of a stake in the social order. They feel that there's less legitimacy to the police and government, and they try to get away with as much as they can. A third possibility is that if you see that there's a huge ladder extending above you, then you're more touchy about insults and any threat to your status, since you're more likely to react with violence. So we don't really know why, but there is a connection, certainly.
How much of this do you think we can say that we have conquered, or how cyclical is this? Were we at the bottom of the curve, and can that again go up, or can we take some solace that maybe we were at where we're at?
I don't think there's any evidence for cycles. There is evidence for randomness. So can we be blindsided by a sudden unpleasant surprise? Then yes. But that's different from saying, well, we've been without a war for several decades. That must mean that the pressure is building up and the system's going to blow any minute. And the more peace we have, the more likely war is going to be the next year. That model is wrong. The tension is building up. And for example, just look at, say, Canada, the United States, haven't had a shooting war since the War of 1812. But does that mean that they're kind of just roaring for another fight? Well, no, you can go for an awful long time without feeling the need to fight again.
I want to think and I want to believe that the world is a more peaceful place. How do I do that?
Look at the numbers. That is... it's not a question of what you want to believe or what you feel. It's just a question of counting bodies. And if you count bodies, you see that there are far fewer people being killed violently now than there were several decades ago, to say nothing of several centuries ago.
The name of the book is The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. It's published by Viking. Steven Pinker, a pleasure as always. I thank you very much for spending time with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, the book is The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. The book is published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.